fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A terrific Tuesday to you. It's September the 28th in the year of our Lord 2021. And here are a few more digits for you. The phone number to call, 1-888-914-9149. It's a toll-free line to talk to me for free on The Cale Clark Show, 1-888-914-9149. This month, the phone bill comes out of producer Lucas's salary. By the way, it was producer Lucas's birthday yesterday.
You found out, Cale.
He forgot to tell me, so...
Well, Father Rocky exposed me last night.
On the family rosary?
During the family rosary.
So that's great. Millions of people praying for you.
You can't get by anything from Father Rocky, so...
Yeah, he is... he really is pretty quick on the draw, that's for sure. Nothing gets past that guy. But hey, if you want to call in, and maybe when you call in, you can, who knows? Maybe even producer Lucas might pick up the phone. You can wish him a happy birthday in person. 1-888-914-9149. The Twitter handle for me is at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We have a show account too, at Cale Clark Show. The email address is Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And speaking of Father Rocky, he kind of made up this title for Our Lady of Fair Skies. And he always pulls this one out on the walk to Mary to make sure that there's a nice day. And here's another Marian title that, you know, it's not made up by Father Rocky, but it's one that a lot of people didn't know too much about until Pope Francis, you know, really increased devotion to Our Lady under the title of Mary Undoer of Knots. And today is the feast day of Mary Undoer of Knots. It's also the feast day, by the way, of Good King Wenceslas. That's right, the guy from the Christmas Carol. We'll talk about him later. The real life guy. But I want to talk about Mary Undoer of Knots off the top, because you guys probably have some stories about this, and I'd like you to call in 1-888-914-9149. Tell us about a time when Mary undid a proverbial knot in your life, some sort of a situation that happened. Mary was able to resolve it through her intercession. We want to hear about this. 1-888-914-9149. Let me tell you a little bit about the background of this feast day, because again, a lot of people don't know too much about it, but Church Pop has a nice little piece on it. And actually, the devotion to Mary under this title, Undoer of Knots, or Untier of Knots, as it's sometimes known, goes back about 300 years, but again, Pope Francis was really the guy who popularized it, you know, in these last few years. And he did this too before he became Pope, when he was in Buenos Aires, Argentina, when he was the Archbishop of Buenos Aires. And here's what he said. He said, through Mary, all the knots of our heart, every knot of our conscience can be undone. And this is one Marian devotion that doesn't have an apparition attached to it. But there was a miraculous event that happened. Let me tell you a little bit about the story. Well, it all starts in the 1600s, way back in the 1600s. The German nobleman Wolfgang Langenmantel. I have a feeling this might be on the week that wasn't, Lucas. Wolfgang, it's just fun to say Wolfgang. Wolfgang Langenmantel, hopefully I didn't butcher his name too badly, and his wife Sophie, they were having a lot of marital issues. And in fact, they were cruising towards a divorce. Things were not looking good in that household. And he was really upset about this, Wolfgang. And he actually went to see a priest about this for marital counseling. And the priest's name was Father Jacob Rehm. And he was a Jesuit priest. And it's kind of interesting that the Jesuit Pope Francis is really responsible in these days for really reviving this devotion to Our Lady Untier of Knots. Anyway, so Father Jacob Rehm gave Wolfgang some marriage counseling, some advice, and they prayed about his situation. And they decided to meet every once in a while, and they would keep asking the Virgin Mary for her intercession for Wolfgang's marriage. Now, the last time that they met in this sort of series of meetings that they had, the date was September the 28th, today, 1615. And what Wolfgang did on this day was he brought Father Rehm his wedding ribbon. Now, this is something that you see in some cultures. where the couple are like literally tied together during their wedding mass with a ribbon as a symbol of unity. And so he brought this ribbon to Father Rem. And apparently it had a lot of knots in it. And so did his marriage, quite literally. And so Father Rem, Father Jacob Rem, took the ribbon and he put it next to an image of Our Lady of the Snows. Don't ask me about Our Lady of the Snows. We'll do that another day. But he lifted it up, put it next to an image of Our Lady of the Snows, and he asked Mary if she would please untie the knots of Wolfgang's marriage to Sophie. And here's where the miracle happened. The ribbon loosened. All the knots came out of it. It became completely untied, and it changed color. It became really, really super technicolor white. It was just pure white. And so I don't really know what happened after that, but I do know this, that Wolfgang and Sophie reconciled. They didn't get divorced. Their marriage was saved. It was all through the intercession of Our Lady Undoer of Knots. Now, that's kind of the modern story. And there's actually a painting, a very famous painting that goes with this. And I'll tell you a little bit about the image in just a moment. But the sort of concept of Mary as the undoer of knots actually goes back way further. It goes all the way back to the early church in the second century. The great apologist of the Catholic faith, St. Irenaeus, he said this in his masterpiece called Against the Heretics, or Against the False Teachings, Against the Heresies. St. Irenaeus said, "The knot of Eve's disobedience was untied by the obedience of Mary. What the Virgin Eve bound by her unbelief, the Virgin Mary loosened by her faith." And so St. Irenaeus was one of the great writers who picked up on this theme of Mary as the new Eve. Christ is a new Adam. Mary is the new Eve. They're kind of a new team that undoes the damage done by our good pals Adam and Eve. And this is why in John's Gospel, Jesus refers to Mary as woman. It's not because he's being rude to his mom. She is the new woman, the new Eve, the woman in the new humanity. She is completely obedient to God, whereas the first Eve was not. Just as the first Eve stood by a tree and believed the word of the serpent, Mary, the new Eve, stood by the tree of the cross, and she believed the word of the angel who said, the good angel, Gabriel, who said, "You're going to bear the Messiah." And she was obedient to that, and she said, "Yes, be it done unto me according to thy word." She was the first person to say yes to God's plan to save the world through Jesus Christ. So let me talk to you a little bit about the image of Our Lady Undoer of Knots, and maybe you've seen this image online. It's actually a beautiful painting. And this actually came from Wolfgang and Sophie, who stayed together through the intercession of Mary, and they had a grandson who became a priest, and his name was Father Hieronymus Langenmantel. And he actually sort of commissioned this painting to be done in memory of the story, which obviously became a story that was probably told a lot at the dinner table through their family history. You know, you hear these family stories again and again and again. And so he said, "You know, I really want a painting done to memorialize what happened here." So in this painting, Mary is kind of untying this ribbon. An angel gives her this ribbon, this marriage ribbon that's all in knots, and she's kind of untying it. And there's another angel who presents the untied side sort of to us, sort of saying, "Mary can do this in your life too." Also in the painting, Mary is crushing Satan's head, and that's an image of the Immaculate Conception, of course. The Holy Spirit is there. And then at the bottom of the image, this is really cool, at the bottom of the painting, Wolfgang himself is in the painting, and he's walking next to Saint Raphael, the Archangel, and a little dog, which is kind of cool because in the Book of Tobit, I'm going to talk about this tomorrow on the Faith Explained show, 12:30 Central on Relevant Radio. It's right after the Mass. We call it Class After Mass because tomorrow is the Feast of the Archangels. It used to be just St. Michael's Feast. He had it all to himself. But then in the old rite, before the liturgical changes, each of the three archangels, Raphael, St. Michael, St. Gabriel, had their own feast day. They're all kind of lumped together now on the 29th. But I'm going to talk about the three archangels over the next three episodes of The Faith Explained. Where can you find them in the Bible? And St. Raphael, you can find him in the Book of Tobit. And that also, by the way, has to do with a marriage. Raphael helps to set up a marriage and keep it going. And so, and he brings his little dog with him as well. So that's kind of cool. So St. Raphael's in the painting along with Wolfgang, and they're walking together, and there's a little dog. So that's kind of cool. So this image was painted around the year 1700 by an artist named Johann Melchior George Schmittner, who has at least two too many names for me. He's got four names there. Johann Melchior George Schmittner. Okay. Anyway, so he was the one who painted this image around the year 1700. And if you were to go to Augsburg in Bavaria in Germany, you could see it there. And it is at St. Peter's Church in Augsburg. So it's a beautiful image. And there's a lot of prayers that are associated with Mary, undoer of knots. And maybe one of the most famous one prayers comes to us from Pope Francis. And so let's check out this prayer that Pope Francis advocates for Our Lady, Undoer of Knots. And again, I want you to call in to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. I want to hear about how Our Lady has undone the knots in your life, these situations, or an intractable situation. And maybe you prayed the rosary and asked her for help, and she has obtained through her intercession the favor that you have asked. Well, here's Pope Francis's prayer to Mary, Undoer of Knots. And it goes like this. Holy Mary, full of God's presence during the day of your life, during the days of your life, you accepted with full humility the Father's will, and the devil was never capable of tying you up with his confusion. Once, with your Son, you interceded for our difficulties, and full of kindness and patience, you gave us an example of how to untie the knots in our lives. By remaining forever our mother, you put in order and make more clear the ties that link us to the Lord. Holy Mother, Mother of God and our Mother, to you who untie with a motherly heart the knots of our life, we pray to you to receive in your hands, and then you can put the intention here, whatever person you have in mind or situation, and to free him or her of the knots and confusion with which our enemy attacks. Through your grace, your intercession, and your example, deliver us from all evil. Our Lady, untie the knots that prevent us from being united with God, so that we, free from sin and error, may find him in all things, may have our hearts placed in him, and may serve him always in our brothers and sisters. Amen. And just as I was reciting that prayer from Pope Francis, it's kind of interesting how the word untie and the word united, you know, they look kind of the same on paper. Untie the knots that prevent us from being united with God. So these knots come about, obviously, through the enemy. He wants to sow confusion, discord, disunity. And God is a God of order, a God of peace, a God of tranquility. And so a lot of the anxiety in our lives, I think, can be dissipated if we ask Mary for her intercession. And so that's kind of the story behind Mary, Undoer of Knots. It's kind of cool. Mary, whose yes opened the door for God to undo the knot of the ancient disobedience, which was brought about by, guess who, Satan. She's the mother who patiently, lovingly brings us to God so that he can untangle the knots of our soul by his fatherly mercy. That's one of the things that Pope Francis said. So if you want to grab a hold of me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, you can also call in 1-888-914-9149. Let us know how Mary, Undoer of Knots, has helped you in your life. And producer Lucas, there's somebody on Twitter who's already responded, right?
Yeah, that's right. A guy by the name of Doug. Let me pull up the really cool testimony. He said, "Our Holy Mother has restored peace and order in my life. She keeps me on task and focused on Jesus Christ. She pushes me when I need pushing and offers her love, comfort, and support when I'm struggling with my cross."
Mm. I love it. I absolutely love it. That's a great take. Thank you, Doug. And thanks for sharing that. And you can share your testimony as well. If you're too shy to call in, you can always tweet at me, at Cale Clark, and we'll try to read it on the air if possible. And speaking of the cross, we've got another question about the cross. It's about the stations of the cross. Becky is calling from Niles, Ohio. Hi, Becky.
Yes, hi.
How you doing?
Good. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. What's on your mind?
I always wondered, I've wondered this for years doing Stations of the Cross. Pretty sure it's the eighth station when the women are weeping and Jesus says, "Do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and your children." I never really knew what that meant.
Yeah, that is something that's flummoxed a lot of people. And it's kind of a scene. I believe you can find this quote from Jesus in Luke's gospel, if memory serves me correctly. I don't have it in front of me right now, but what Jesus says, if they will do this when the wood is green, what will they do when it is dry? And we don't weep for your children. So what's that all about? Well, and I think also in the context of this, Jesus also says to the women of Jerusalem, blessed are the wombs which never bore and the breasts which never nursed. For if they do this when the wood is green, what are they going to do when it's dry? Well, when the wood is green, when wood is fresh and new, it's kind of has that green tint to it. If you've ever built a fence or anything like that, you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
And then it kind of ages after a while and gets more dry. And the drier the wood gets, the more liable it is to catch on fire. And really what Jesus was prophesying about there was the future judgment that was going to befall on the city of Jerusalem. And of course, Jerusalem was destroyed in the year 70 AD. And this is why Jesus wept over the city of Jerusalem, because he knew that he was going to be rejected by the chief priests, by the leaders of Jerusalem. Not by all the people, of course. Many people did believe in Jesus. That's why they did the triumphal procession on Palm Sunday, and Hosanna to the King, to the Son of David. A lot of people thought Jesus was the Messiah, but of course, the high priest, Caiaphas, and his cronies didn't. And they saw Jesus as a threat. Obviously, they cooperated with the Romans. They're in cahoots to get him crucified. But Jesus had prophesied that the destruction of the temple would happen in one generation. And how long is a generation in the Bible? 40 years. 40 years. So Jesus died approximately 30 AD, somewhere between 30-33 AD. When was the temple destroyed? In the year 70 AD. So basically, this was a judgment on the temple establishment for rejecting God's Messiah. And it's not a judgment on all the people, not on all the Jews. Many Jews believed in Jesus. In fact, thousands of Jews believed in Jesus as the Messiah. And most of the early Christians were Jews, including Our Lady, all the apostles. And so that's really what it's about. He's like, you think this is bad? I'm completely innocent here as the sinless Son of God, and this is what's happening to me? Well, if this is what happens to the innocent, what is going to happen when God comes in judgment later on the wickedness that's happening? And so that was the worst thing that ever could have happened, Becky, to the Jewish people, the destruction of the temple, because the temple was a miniature model of the universe, Becky. It really was like the end of the world. And a lot of the prophecies in the Bible about the end of the world, it's really about the destruction of the temple. But there will come an end of the actual space-time universe as well when Christ returns. So it's kind of a sneak preview of what's going to happen at the final judgment too, if that makes any sense. So
yes.
And obviously, just to finish up real quick on the women, that's why Jesus said, when this happens and the city is under siege and all kinds of terrible things happen when Jerusalem was under siege, it was just awful. He's like, if you have young children, that is going to be an absolutely horrible time. And so don't weep for me. Weep for yourselves and your children. That's really what it's all about.
Boy, you really explained that. I was so confused. Every time I would do the station, when it comes to that one, I never quite knew what he meant. But now I see. Now I see what you were trying to say. Yes.
Okay, cool. I'm glad that cleared it up.
Thank you.
You got it, Becky.
Yes,
thank you very much for calling. It's a great question. And call anytime. That was Becky calling from Niles, Ohio. So if you want to call in, 888-914-9149. We'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Today is the feast day of Our Lady Undoer of Knots, which has really been popularized in recent years by Pope Francis. And Lucas, you're going to ask me something, what?
Yeah, well, I was just curious if you had any anecdotes or stories about Our Lady Undoer of Knots in your own life.
I do not. No pun intended.
Oh my God.
But no, I personally
don't.
I need
to get better at multitasking so I can also have hit the sad trumpet sound at that bad dad joke. But
no. Yeah, that's okay. There's no bad dad jokes. Come on.
But okay, so she didn't. But Mary helped you tie the knot, though, right?
That is true. Hey, that is true.
Because right? I remember you told that your wedding story one time about how you and your wife got engaged. So
yeah, she really did help us tie the knot for sure. Yeah, so I guess I have a merry, you know, doer of Notch. She helps help us talk. But I know that a lot of you guys out there listening have a testimony about how Our Lady and Doer of Knots has helped you in a particular situation in your life. And so we're going to go to somebody who has a little story about that. Gloria is calling from New York. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, Kale. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling.
Okay, good. When I started hearing about the devotion, you know, when Pope Francis started with that, I was so fascinated with the image and with the story itself. So I started asking Virgin Mary to help me with relationships that I had had problems in the past.
Okay.
And with people that I was not talking to or, you know, that was separated from. And it was just a miracle because I never thought that was going to happen, and it happened, and it has happened many times. Like every time when I ask Virgin Mary, I'm tired of nuts, to help me, every time when I ask her, you know, only one time I have to ask that for the miracle, and she does it all the time. So I'm very happy, and I didn't know today was her celebration, her holiday, and I'm going to frame a little picture that I have of her here. Yeah.
That's beautiful. I think that's just great. Thanks for calling in, Gloria. Yeah, and it's always good to keep an image of Our Lady close by. And yeah, a lot of people didn't realize that that in fact today is the feast day. So I think it's awesome that you have that story, and thank you so much for calling in. Really, really appreciate that. That was Gloria calling from New York. All right, we're going to go to Manuel, who's calling from San Diego. Hi, Manuel.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Good to meet you too.
Thank you for taking my call. I had an off-topic question about how physical appearances come to people, like how people in Asia have like different eyes than the rest of the world, and how people in different countries have like different physical appearances. I wanted to know how that came to them when Adam and Eve were obviously the first people, and they didn't have those physical appearances.
Well, I mean, first of all, how old are you, Manuel?
14.
You're 14. Wow. Thanks for calling in, man. It's so cool to hear young people calling in the show. Really appreciate that. And that's a really good question. Manuel calling in from one of my favorite cities in the world, the beautiful city of San Diego, California. Yeah, in terms of people's characteristics, I'm no geneticist, that's for sure. I'm kind of out of my depth here. But I think a lot of it, as people migrated and moved to different regions of the world, obviously, if you live near the equator, you're going to have more melanin than somebody who lives in Iceland, let's say, who doesn't get too much sunlight, and you're just you're dying for vitamin D. So I think that may be part of the answer to your question in terms of it could be due to where people live in the world, I think. But anyway, so I'm not a scientist, so I'm afraid that I'm going to have to leave it there. But it's a really interesting question, that's for sure. But one thing we all have, thanks to our good pals Adam and Eve, is a sin problem. We've inherited original sin, and of course the guilt of that is washed away through baptism. And so just as one man, through one man, sin came into the world, as St. Paul writes about in the Bible, well, guess what? Through one man, Jesus Christ, the God-man, redemption comes into the world and spreads to all people as well. So really appreciate that call. Call back anytime, Manuel. Thank you very, very much. All right, so, and we also have another caller who's calling, doesn't want to come on air, but is asking me the question, where in the Bible, Cale, do you find that a generation is 40 years? I mentioned that this 40-year period that sort of lasted till the death of Christ, until the destruction of the temple in the year 70 AD. Where does that come from? Well, it's actually a Greek word. One of the places where you can find this is in Matthew chapter 24, where Jesus says, "Truly I say to you," and by the way, he's talking about the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from heaven, the powers of the heaven will be shaken. Well, This is sort of Jesus' discourse about two things, really. He's kind of talking on two levels. Number one, about the destruction of Jerusalem in the year 70 AD, and also the future destruction of the space-time universe, how it's going to be transformed. There's going to be a new heaven and a new earth. Well, one thing you should understand is that the temple in Jerusalem, the curtain that separated the Holy of Holies from the rest of the temple, it had, guess what was on it? The heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon, the stars, sort of a depiction of the universe. And so when that temple came crashing down, well, first of all, it was kind of the destruction of the temple kind of started with the death of Christ, because at the moment of his death, the curtain in the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And by the way, that was pretty high. You couldn't just climb up there. That means God did it if it came from the top. And so the Holy of Holies was kind of opened up. God's presence was on the loose now anywhere in the world. That's one of the reasons why Jesus said in John's gospel, you know, to the Samaritan woman, hey, Samaritan woman is like, hey, you say that, you know, we have to worship in Jerusalem, yada, yada, yada. And Jesus is saying, believe me, the time is coming when you can worship the Father in spirit and in truth anywhere in the world. And I'm kind of paraphrasing Jesus there, I know. But God's presence is kind of on the loose. And Jesus says, it's very interesting. He says, truly, I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Matthew 24:34. Well, the Greek word that's used there is the word gene, which means generation. And that refers to a period of 40 years. Well, Jesus died around the year 30, and all these things did take place within a 40-year period by the year AD 70. So there you have it. And hopefully that's a helpful answer to your question to that anonymous caller. All right, let's go to Anne, who's calling from Orange County, California. Hi, Anne.
Hi, how are ya?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
Awesome. Hey, I got a question from my 10-year-old son who was asking me about knots. And since we're talking about Mary, undoer of knots, my son had received a cord of St. Philomena, which has knots on it. And we know that our Franciscan brothers wear cords with knots on it. Mm. And Mary is the undoer of knots. So his question is, what do the knots represent in our religion?
Well, in terms of those the knots of St. Philomena, I'm afraid I don't know anything about that. I'd have to do some research on that one. So, producer Lucas, you know anything about that or St. Philomena? No, I'm afraid I'm not an expert on St. Philomena. But so off the top of my head, I don't know. But in terms of what the knots mean, just in general, it's this idea that there's a situation, there's a problem, and St. Irenaeus said with respect to Mary undid the knot of Eve's disobedience. And so, yeah, I think that's really what it refers to with respect to Our Lady, undoer of knots. In terms of the knots in the Franciscan, you know, cords, it could be prayer knots. Maybe like a little make your own rosary out of a cord type thing. I don't know. That's a good question. So I'm afraid I haven't been much help to you on that one. So I apologize.
Well, I appreciate the thought, though.
Well, yeah, well, I don't know. So I think we both need to maybe do some internet research on this and find out, because that is a really good question. I'm afraid I don't know much about St. Philomena. But hey, I'm just on the journey of learning along with all of you guys, right? We're traveling together and we're on the path. And hey, I try to, when I don't know something, I try to admit that, because I've found in my life that when I pretend that I know what I'm talking about, it usually doesn't turn out too well. So,
no, Anne, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Anne. Thanks for calling, and thanks for listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. All right, so let's go to Connie. Connie has a call. She's calling from Reston, Virginia. Hi, Connie.
Hi there. How are you, Clark? Thank you so much for taking the call. I have a story about Mary, undoer of knots, that happened to me several years ago as I were working for a global organization. And we had a gigantic project where we were merging two companies, and we had to load about 170,000 employees into a new database for our travelers to be able to travel. Mm-hmm. We're all ready to go. We're about 2 days before go live, and nothing was working. Our programmers had everything set. Everything should have been working. The profiles weren't loading. Well, I remembered at the last minute that I had the blessing of seeing Marie Undur of Knott's in Germany, the original painting in Germany in Augsburg.
Wow.
And I thought of her and said, oh my gosh, that's who we have to pray for. And we did. And immediately, the profiles loaded and our programmers were on the call and they said, oh my gosh, it's a miracle. Everything is working. Within a half hour, everything was loaded, which took them, at the time, it was already 3 days they were working on this problem. It was amazing, amazing. And still to this day, this was about 4 years ago this happened, and people still talk about that miracle in our company, and it opened the doors to so many amazing conversations with people. It was really beautiful.
I'm sure it did, yeah. So there's some real apostolic fruit that came from that.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Great.
And it's really cool that you saw the actual image in Augsburg, and were you struck by it?
Original,
how beautiful was the original?
It was so beautiful, and I never knew anything about it. I was actually in an adoration chapel, and there was this little booklet there about Marie Undur of Knott's, which I had never seen before, never heard of it. And I said, oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. And as I'm reading it, I coincidentally happened to be going to Germany on a business trip a week later, and I said, I have to alter my plans and go to the city to see it, because it was so moving when I was reading that booklet with the story that you told earlier. I said, I have to go see it. And then I was hooked. It is a beautiful, beautiful painting. Yeah.
Oh,
amazing.
That's great. You know, I've always wanted to go to Germany as well, and go to Bavaria and see maybe the birthplace of Pope Benedict. And also, I must confess, I'd like to drink a little German wheat beer, some fine Bavarian wheat beer.
Oh, yes, it's very good. Yes, very good.
In moderation, of course.
Amazing. The wine is great. You know, it is an amazing place to be. Germany is very special. Yes,
yeah.
It's really great. Yeah.
Well, that's a really great story that you told, Connie. Thank you so much for calling in. That
Thank
was so
you.
Cool. Glad you shared that. Call anytime, Connie. That was Connie from Reston, Virginia. All right, we're going to go now to Don, who is calling from Cranston, Rhode Island. Hi, Don.
Hi, how you doing, Kiel?
I'm well,
so
thank you.
You had a caller. That's good. That's good. So you had a caller a few moments ago regarding the question of what do the knots represent? So my understanding, my recollection is, like in the Franciscan order, for example, when a Franciscan friar, whether priest or brother, puts the rope around his waist with the knots represent poverty, chastity, obedience, each knot that you see, like on a Franciscan in particular. I can't speak for other religious orders, but I'm pretty sure that that's what that represents. And regarding St. Philomena, like if a layperson chooses to wear a cord, or even a religious of St. Philomena, for example, I think it's kind of putting your body under subjection and doing a form of penance.
Okay.
I don't really know more about the knot piece for St. Philomena. I just know that it's like a form of subjection to God, that you're making like a promise of reparation and penance. So a hair shirt was like kind of along the same line.
Yeah. Gotcha. This is kind of make me think we need to do a show on Saint Philomena. We all need to learn a little bit. I don't know if her feast day is coming up soon.
She is like such a powerful saint. I pray to her daily. She's a very, very powerful saint. I think she's a saint for our times, in all honesty. Mm. And a lot of the popes have great devotion to her. But she, I think she's a great saint for our times, because she really, really represented modesty, chastity. But she's a very powerful saint. So great segment if you choose to do that sometime.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. And by the way, when you were talking about the Franciscan cords and the knots representing poverty, chastity, and as you were saying that, I was like, yes, I've seen this before. Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And it's, there's such great, you know, we obviously don't take vows as lay people or anything like that along those lines. But having said that, I've always thought poverty, chastity, obedience, these promises that are made by religious, I mean, there's such a repudiation of what causes so much sin in the culture, right? Poverty, chastity, and obedience, we can kind of compare that and contrast that to money, sex, and power, right? that leads to a lot of sin in our world. And so that's the corrective. And we all kind of can glom onto that, even if we're not taking actual vows. We really need to live that spirit of poverty. We need to live purity no matter what our state in life is, and obedience to God's word and obedience to our lawful superiors, wherever they may be. And I think that's really great. So, Dawn, thank you very much for calling and illuminating, shedding a little bit more light on that.
All you do.
Oh, God bless you. Please pray for me, and I'll pray for you too, Dawn. That was Dawn calling from Cranston, Rhode Island. And can I slip in another call, Lucas? Okay, sounds good. All right, Catherine is calling from Farmington, Michigan. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. In my holy readings over the years, I heard that Our Lady of Knots, the knots represent a problem in our lives.
Yep.
And
yep,
she
absolutely
can undo that knot. I came in the middle of when Connie was speaking, so I didn't hear what she said.
Yeah, we talked about Our Lady Undoer of Knots. Yeah, how she can help undo the problems in her life. Talked about the origins of that devotion. Yeah, absolutely. That is so true. Okay. And was there something else you wanted to say about the temple?
Yes, I heard that or read that the curtain in the temple was 3 inches thick.
Wow. So the ripping of the temple curtain is even more impressive, I guess. Yeah. So that I don't recall. I'm sure I've never read that exactly, but that may in fact have been the case. It was certainly very impressive from everything that I've read, and an absolutely holy place to the Jews, of course, still is to this day. If you've ever been to Jerusalem, you can still go to the Western Wall, the last remaining supporting wall of the temple. And it's actually really cool. You can go on a tour underneath the old temple walls, and you get a sense for how huge the foundation stones were. They just weighed tons. They were massive. And so when this thing came down in this blazing inferno, as Josephus, the great first century Jewish historian, describes it, it was a horrific sight. Just the whole thing was laid waste, and exactly as Jesus had predicted. And of course, we are now the spiritual temple of the church, and St. Peter says that each one of us are living stones in this temple that God is building called the church. And really, yes, there are church buildings. Some of them are very sacred to us, especially because our Lord himself is there in the Eucharist, in the tabernacle. But we are also a temple, as it were, a living temple called the Catholic Church. Catherine, thank you so much for calling. Thank you for listening. We've got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show. If you want to call in, 888-914-9149. And I'm going to tell you the story when we come back about the real-life good King Wenceslas, because he shares a feast day with Our Lady Undoer of Knots. It's his day, too. We might even do a little Christmas carol singing when we come back. 888-914-9149. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Yes. Kind of sounds like a cross between a video game and an aerobics session from the 1980s. That's quite the song. Speaking of songs, in less than 3 months, we can start singing this song. It's a great Christmas hymn. And yes, it is less than 3 months until Christmas. And you're saying, I know, Cale, just let me get through Halloween first. Let me get through Thanksgiving. But it's coming. And the reason why I have to mention this today is because today is also the feast day of St. Wenceslas, good King Wenceslas. And Bing Crosby has one of the most famous versions of that classic Christmas hymn. Here it is. Take it away, Bing.
Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen, when the snow lay round about, deep and crisp and even. brightly shone the moon at night. Though the frost was cruel, when a poor man came inside, gathering winter fuel.
You know, I just want to keep that rolling because Bing is so classic. He's so smooth, but it is a talk show. It's not Christmas radio, but today is of course the feast day of Saint Wenceslas. I just love that hymn, Lucas.
Hey, Kale. Question.
Yeah.
Do you think it would be successful if I pitched to the people above me Kale's Christmas carols for the next pledge drive that we do? You
think Kale's karaoke would... Christmas.
Kale's karaoke Christmas.
We actually do want people to donate to Relevant Radio.
They so might that might not be a good for idea. You to stop singing.
Yeah, exactly. No, make it stop. I'll pay anything. But no, I love that song. You know, bring me flesh and bring me wine. Blah 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 blah. I can never remember the rest of the words, but it's great stuff. And well, here's the true story behind King Wenceslas, who wasn't actually a king, by the way. He was not actually a king. We have to disabuse you of that notion. But his official title was the Duke of Bohemia. The Duke of Bohemia. So, I mean, from time to time, producer Lucas has been accused of living a bohemian existence, and apparently so did Wenceslas. He was the Duke of Bohemia, but he was actually a very good ruler. He took care of his people. There was a little piece on him on the Alatea website by Philip Kozlowski. I kind of filled in a lot of the blanks for me on him. And there was a legend that was pretty widespread about Saint Wenceslas, about how he used to take care of his people. And this Christmas carol does capture the essence of the man, because he would go out every night and give alms to the poor. And there was a church writer by the name of Cosmas of Prague. And in the year 1119, he wrote this about Saint Wenceslas. He said, "His deeds, I think, you know better than I could tell you. For, as is read in his Passion," and you say, well, hang on here, does he have a Passion too? He does. I'll tell you about that in a second. "Nobody doubts that, rising every night from his noble bed, with bare feet and only one chamberlain, he went around to God's churches and gave alms generously to widows, orphans, those in prison, and those afflicted by every difficulty, so much so that he was considered not a prince, but rather the father of all the wretched." So, people loved this guy. He would go out and he would really have the smell of the sheep, you know, as Pope Francis would say. He would get out among his people. Again, he wasn't a cleric. He was a ruler. He was the Duke of Bohemia. And that's really where this carol got its origin from, how he looked out at night. And, you know, in the carol, he sees this poor man shivering from the cold and says, bring him inside here. And he gathers some food and starts up a fire. And of course, at the end of the song, it tends to encourage us to try to do the same. "Therefore, Christian men, be sure, wealth or rank possessing, ye who now will bless the poor, shall yourselves find blessing." Okay, so I had to do it again, sorry. But couldn't resist. Apparently, Wenceslas was brought up by his grandmother, Saint Ludmilla. And his grandmother was a martyr. I was trying to find some time to dig up some stuff on Saint Ludmilla, but his grandmother was martyred for the Catholic faith. Anyways, she took him in after his father died. She raised him in the faith. And at that point, Christianity was very new in Bohemia. And Wenceslas' great-grandfather was actually converted by Saints Cyril and Methodius, who were great missionaries in that part of the world. However, Wenceslas' mother, his own mother, and her name was Dragomir, and I guess she was a bit of a dragon lady because she was opposed to Christianity, and she actually cooked up an evil plot along with her other son, and his name was, you're not going to believe this, but his name was Boleslaw, like coleslaw. Anyways, this was a cold, conniving plot. It was as chilly as coleslaw itself. So Dragomir and Boleslaw, her son, conspired to kill her other son, Wenceslas, and they actually were able to accomplish that. And this was kind of his own little passion. They tricked him. This is so dastardly. They said, "Come celebrate Mass. It's the feast of Saints Cosmas and Damian. Come, you know, we'll go to Mass together. We'll have a little party afterwards." And he said, "Yeah, great, I'll show up." Well, three of Boleslaw's friends murdered Wenceslaus on the way to Mass, and he actually died and collapsed on the church steps. And Boleslaw then, of course, took his place. He became the Duke of Bohemia. But 3 years later, he repented of his evil, and God convicted him. And soon after Wenceslaus died, people started, you know, saying this guy was a saint. They started asking for his intercession. All these miracles started to happen. And Boleslaw, who had kind of come back to God at this point, he was obviously quite repentant that he had killed his own brother. He had his brother's body moved to the Cathedral of St. Vitus in Prague. And the reason why he's called King Wenceslaus and why the Christmas Carol gets that name is because after he died, the Holy Roman Emperor Otto I gave him the title King posthumously after he died. So beautiful. He's the real life Wenceslaus was a beautiful image of Christian love. A great political leader who actually cared about his people, took care of the poor, took care of the vulnerable. And that's why this hymn was written about him. So there you go. That's the actual story. Did you know that, Lucas?
I had no idea. That's really cool, though.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty awesome. So, and that, but we kind of ran out of time, too. But it's also, and I think Patrick Alog, who's taking your calls today, he did mention a few minutes ago that it's also the feast day of San Lorenzo Ruiz, who is the first Filipino saint. So there's a lot going on today. There's a lot going on today. Our Lady Undoer of Nuts, Saint San Lorenzo Ruiz, and of course, Good King Wenceslaus. All right. So what's on your agenda this evening, Lucas, after the show?
Well, Manuel's call really piqued my curiosity, so I'm going to try and do some research, I think, on that question of
not
human
a bad
origins.
Idea.
Yeah.
Not a bad idea. And I'm going to tell you something that I'm working on for another show. And I don't know when I'll get to this. I don't have time to get to it now. But I will say this. It was one of the most bizarre stories I've ever come across. Some people are suggesting that, and we've obviously been following the crisis in Afghanistan, what's going on over there, the Taliban taking over. Some have actually suggested that the Taliban are actually the lost tribes of Israel. I just can't believe this. It's so bizarre. So I did some reading on this. A lot of people are talking about this, and I will share the case for this. I don't think it's legit, but I'll just leave it there. I'm going to give you a little tease, but we will talk about it at some point this week. It kind of begs the question, what did happen to the lost tribes of Israel? And how is God going to bring them back from the nations, from all the nations of the world? Because what happened to them? The lost tribes of Israel never came back. There were 10 tribes that got lost during the exile, never were heard from again. But they're still out there somewhere. And where are they, and how does God get them back? I think the story and the truth will actually surprise you and delight you. So I'm going to talk about that. A lot of religions talk about the lost tribes of Israel. A lot of people are claiming to be part of the lost tribes, people from all over the world. There's actually a story in the New York Times a few days ago about some people in, I think it was in parts of India and also in Myanmar, who are claiming to be descendants of the lost tribes of Israel. So, and don't forget, you know, Mormons, we did this big series on Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses on the Faith Explained program, and you can check the archives for that, check the podcasts. Mormonism, the lost tribes come into play there too, because they think the lost tribes migrated to the New World and set up these huge civilizations. There's no archaeological evidence for this at all. And Jesus appeared to them, allegedly. Not a shred of evidence for it, once again. But the lost tribes figure into a lot of different religious groups. So we will tell you what that's really all about in another episode, but I'm working on that, and lots of cool stuff coming up. By the way, tomorrow, speaking of the Faith Explained, we're starting this brand new series on the archangels. It's going to be a really quick 3-part series. We're going to talk about St. Raphael tomorrow, and we'll talk about St. Michael, and we'll talk about St. Gabriel as well, because tomorrow, the 29th, is the Feast of the Archangels. A lot of great feast days this week, Lucas. Then we got St. Jerome later this week.
Whew. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a, man, every day there's just an awesome saint on the calendar.
I love being Catholic. It's great. There's just all these cool stories about saints that you've never heard of, and then you learn their story, and you're like, man, that's awesome. And then there's like, they're so frequent throughout the year, you're just like, oh, cool.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many of them, and hopefully we're all living saints. And I don't know. You know, if I get canonized one day, they might have to tell the story of my terrible karaoke singing. Will that be part of it? Will that be part of the legend? I don't know.
It depends. It depends if I include it as I write it down.
Yeah, well, I got a long way to go before that happens, I'll tell you. But hopefully we're all living saints. And
I'll appeal to the Vatican and be like, look, he's a great guy, and you really should have heard his carols. They were great. And they'll be like, yeah, I don't think that's a good cause for his canonization. But
we'll see what Father Rocky thinks about the idea of a KL Karaoke Christmas collection for the pledge drive. I don't know, but... Anyways, Father Rocky is coming up an hour from now for the Family Rosary Across America. Do not miss it. Timory is up next, so stay tuned. Lucas Holt produced. Patrick Alok took your calls. We'll be back tomorrow. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.